Outofsight.net presents a Microsoft Accessibility Panel Discussion hosted by Rich DeStenno at our 9th birthday celebration on January 28th, 2017.
My name is Megan Lawrence, and I am the Accessibility Technical Evangelist working at Microsoft.
My name is Kelly Ford. I am a Program Manager on the Windows Accessibility Team at Microsoft.
Well, hello, I'm Brett Humphrey. I'm a program manager on accessibility at Microsoft.
So I'll turn it over to you, Megan, and you can start, and everybody's listening and eager to hear it. So over to you.
Okay. Fantastic. Thanks so much, Rick. First of all, I just want to congratulate Outofsight on its 9th birthday. We had the opportunity to have a look at the speakers that you had lined up today, and we're incredibly honored to be invited to be part of the celebration. You've got some amazing speakers. It's just really humbling opportunity for us to share with your listeners here today some of the accessibility work that's been done at Microsoft over the last year and a half, as we've deepened our commitment to accessibility and the usability of our products and services. So my name is Megan Lawrence, and I am the Accessibility Technical Evangelist, and I'm going to talk about the inclusive culture that we've built at Microsoft to really support the development of accessibility products and services, and share some of our corporate goals and investments that we've made. Then I'm going to turn it over to Kelly Ford and Brent Humphrey, who are two of our just extremely esteemed senior program managers working on Windows accessibility, specifically Narrator, our out-of-the-box screen reader. So first of all, our mission at Microsoft is to empower every person and every organization on the planet to achieve more. And that really means making sure that our products and services are not only accessible but usable for people with disabilities, because we recognize that people use our technology in a variety of different ways. And so that means we need to work really hard to ensure that we're providing just incredibly great user experiences for everybody. If you look at the statistics, it's amazing that over 1 billion people worldwide have a disability today. So that's about 1 in 7. So when you think about disability as a minority, I think that's really starting to shift to a conversation about majority of people. So whether that's somebody who has who's blind or low vision, has a hearing impairment, cognitive, speech, mobility, increasing different types of what we call neural impairments, so people who are bipolar or have PTSD, we recognize that it's just incredibly important that we meet customers where they are, because with 1 in 7, that means that people with disabilities, they're our customers, they're our employees, they're our family and our friends. And I know that's certainly true for me as I look at my father, who has who had a brain tumor. And because of that brain tumor, he lost his vision, but he also did lose some of his cognitive impairment, meaning that, you know, when we talk about disability, it doesn't always mean like one specific, you know, type of disability like visual disability, but instead may span across different spectrums. At Microsoft, we really believe that accessibility impacts everybody. When you think about inclusive design, which is a design methodology that it allows us to enable and draw on the full range of human diversity, I think the power of using inclusive design and putting accessibility really at the heart of inclusive design means that we build solutions that make our technology usable for just a broad range of people. So when we make something that works really well for somebody who is blind or low vision, that also means that our technology is usable when somebody might have a temporary disability, right? Like a cataract, or potentially a situational usability where they want to do something eyes-free, like driving in the car. I know for me personally, driving in the car is that 1 30-minute that I get every day to myself to communicate with friends and family. And sometimes that means sending text messages. So making sure that I can use the microphone to send a text message means I can do something eyes-free, but it also means that we can do something that it makes a flat screen accessible for somebody who's blind or low vision. Accessibility at Microsoft has been incredibly core to the company really since the beginning. Most people don't know, but that in 1992, when we released our very first Windows product, it actually had accessibility built in. Bill Gates in 1997 announced a corporate commitment to accessibility in what we call trustworthy computing. So it's been core for a very long time to what we believe Microsoft's mission is. But like all journeys, right, sometimes we have these moments of absolute brilliance, and sometimes we have moments of challenge. And I think that's true for Microsoft. When in the last couple of years, we recognized that we just had not been keeping pace with the development of our own accessibility. And that's okay, because a little bit of industry competition is a good thing. It motivated us to get serious about accessibility and go back to what had always been core to Microsoft, which is the accessibility and usability of our products and services. In order to make sure that accessibility is this long-term and enduring goal at Microsoft, we really took strides to make sure that the culture within Microsoft was shifting to an inclusive culture. And we did that in a couple of different ways. One way was making sure that we had a really strong, what we call disability ERG, or employment resource group, so that the employees within Microsoft who had disabilities had the ability to rely on one another to not only network and receive support, but also make sure that the kind of feedback they needed to get to our leadership was ultimately being heard. I think what the real moment where we saw that amazing shift in combining accessibility culture was with our Ability Summit. So every year at Microsoft, we bring together the amazing technical side of Microsoft, which are our amazing designers, developers, and researchers, together with our ERG community. And that's what Jenny Lee Fleury, our Chief Accessibility Officer, calls the holistic groove, which is a term I just absolutely love, because what that meant is that we saw synergy between our technical expertise and really the expertise of our employees internally with disabilities. And all of that's being supported from the top down. Many of you may have heard of Satya Nadella, who's our CEO. And just recently he quoted that, you know, we are focused on designing and building products that our customers love, that are accessible to everybody, and are really built for each of us. And I think that goes back to that incredible support that we need from the top down to see a cultural shift within Microsoft. But we also see that coming up from the bottom in what we call hackathons. So every year we dedicate 1 week to what we call a One Microsoft, where employees are allowed to work on any project that they think is important and necessary. So when we started doing this a couple of years ago, in 2014, we saw 10 ability hacks, or hacks that were really taking on some of the biggest challenges in disability and accessibility. Last year, in 2016, we saw 102 ability hacks. And I think that really goes to show the testament of how the internal employees within Microsoft are really getting behind the effort to not only be creative, but also think incredibly innovatively about how accessibility at the core of our design and development really makes products and services better for everybody. Within Microsoft Accessibility, we're embedded in a couple of different ways. So I sit on the corporate accessibility team, and we have the responsibility of really driving accessibility forward. I call us the culture keepers. We're the ones that continue to push towards inclusive culture. But then we also have amazing people like Brett and Kelly, who are embedded within engineering, legal, research, and also our marketing campaign, that help make sure that we're not only designing and engineering great accessible products, but we're really letting people know that we're doing so. And of course, that's being supported by that incredible employee base that we have, bubbling up those new ideas and all that great feedback from the bottom up. So culture change at Microsoft is really seen from that top down, with support from our senior leadership like Satya Nadella, and also from the bottom up with our incredible engineers who are developing solutions every single day. So that means that we have sort of three main areas of commitment. So the first commitment is to being transparent. We are publishing our accessibility roadmaps frequently, a couple of times a year, to let our customers know exactly what we're up to. This isn't about secrecy, right? This is about being open with what our plans are to ensure that our products are accessible. A second main pillar is around accountability. We are prioritizing accessibility and inclusive design in the development of all of our products and services moving forward. And that's something that we are committed to doing, in doing that through that inclusive culture that I just described to everybody. Now, in my mind, there's a couple of, it's a two-sided coin, right? You have the accessibility of our products and services and websites, which we're driving to make sure that they're not only compliant with the law, but they're really great usable experiences. And we're doing that in an environment that's inclusive. So we have inclusive hiring initiatives throughout the company, and I can absolutely tell you that we have teams coming to our coming to me on a weekly basis saying, oh my gosh, do you have anybody great with a disability that you know wants to work here at Microsoft? Because we are actively looking for people to recruit into all of our engineering departments, design, research, marketing, sales, you name it. And we support all of that with just the incredible partnership that we see with our customers and NGOs. We recognize here that we're only as good as the feedback that we get from our customers. So a little bit later on, I'll set the teaser out there, that I'll give you a couple of ways that you can get active and help Microsoft make the accessibility of our products even better by participating in feedback channels. We really continue to strive and push forward with the innovation of new products and services as well. Again, through those hackathons, and we have a whole dedicated research team at Microsoft that focuses on accessibility innovation. And from the last year, year and a half, there's a couple of things that I think we've really learned as a company, which is just there's been an incredible wave of interest from not only NGOs and our customers, but really to get in there with us and be part of making our products and services better. We recognize that people with disabilities, our employees, are an incredible asset to this company, and we want to continue to grow the number of people with disabilities that work here at Microsoft. And that accessibility is really about design. It's about starting early and checking in frequently with how our products are being designed and used out there in the real world. And we continue to work very hard with all of our internal employees to make sure that they understand what accessibility is and how to really do that on a level that can scale throughout the company and certainly throughout the world. So that's kind of an overview of how Microsoft accessibility culture is being set up on a corporate level. But now I want to turn it over to Brett and Kelly, who are going to talk specifically about the work that's been done in Windows around our out-of-the-box screen reader narrator. So take it away, you guys.
Well, thanks. Hey, Rick, this is Brett. And to kind of give a little overview, just kind of where we're at with Windows 10 and Narrator. So I really appreciate you guys letting us be here today. It's just fun to get out and kind of talk about what we're doing and where we're at. For me personally, I've been around the accessibility in the Windows division now for about 9 to 10 years, working on the different products from Windows 7 to what we have today. And on that journey, there's been a great journey with what do we do with screen reading and what are we doing in box with Narrator. And so for the past few releases from Windows 10 to Windows 10 anniversary update, and now on to what will be the Windows Creators update, which will be the next release of Windows 10, we've been spent a lot of time focusing on Narrator. And one of the things that we've really been focused on is kind of ease of use and really trying to simplify the interaction model. We know that there's a lot of complexity sometimes in how you look through apps. We also understand that apps will have a higher rate of change than they used to. Every month, every few months, those apps will update. And so I spent a really focused effort on, hey, look, how can you get through these narrators in a simpler way? How can you make it easier to learn and really easier to use? So we've been really, really focused on how that is and how it feels, and we'll talk a bit more about that. And part of that in the latest release has been what we call scan mode. So you can really kind of do a cap space and arrow down and get through all of your content, with the core goal being, hey, up, down, arrow key, and space bar. You can really go through an app, activate controls, look through the app and really understand what's going on. And we'll talk more about some updates to that as well. And one of the biggest kind of changes for those that are used to Narrator, when the Creators update comes out, we've changed the hotkey. So for those of you that have been used to Windows key enter, we've actually shifted that to control Windows key enter. We've done that for a very specific reason. We had a bunch of interesting feedback where folks would be holding on the Windows key and doing P for projection, and then they would press enter, and suddenly not only were they projecting, but a screen reader was starting. And it was causing some just kind of frustration in the marketplace. But we still wanted to make sure it was quick and easy to access. You walk up to any computer, hold down the control Windows key, press enter, and there it will start, and you can immediately start doing work. So certainly one of the changes that we have coming up, and we really want to make sure that we highlight that for folks that that are used to the Windows key enter. There's some awesome changes coming up. I know Kelly's been helping out quite a bit, it was kind of really started to work on Braille support, and I'll let Kelly kind of talk through where we're at and what's going on with that.
Well, thanks, Brett. And first of all, Rich, to you and all of your audience, thank you for allowing us to come speak to you, and happy birthday / anniversary. As Megan mentioned, quite a esteemed list of guests we saw earlier, so really feel honored to be here. I've been at Microsoft for a while, working on accessibility in different ways, in different parts, culture change and other things. One of the latest things we're doing, as Brett mentioned, is we're adding what we call beta Braille support to the creator's update of Windows 10. So when that comes out later this year, you will be able to use Braille for the first time with Narrator. We will support more than 27 Braille display manufacturers in more than 35 languages. We are using, for those familiar with some technical sides of Braille, two open source products, LibZooey and Braille TTY, and also contributing back to those open source projects. So it's kind of a community benefits everyone effort here. When we fix things in the Braille translations or other things, the community benefits. And I know there's many active community members also contributing to that technology. Some of the things that we'll have, again, this will be beta support, but we'll have, again, more than 35 languages. We'll have grade 1, grade 2, and support the Unified English Braille and Unified Braille across the board, as well as the earlier standards. You will be able to do both output and Braille input with Narrator. And so we're really excited to get feedback. As I mentioned, this is a beta because we know we're not done. So in this first release, you'll be able to connect your Braille displays over USB or a serial port. We have more work we want to do to enable Bluetooth and things of that nature. And that's just part of why we're calling it a beta. And Megan will talk more about this as well. We have a very strong and active feedback culture, and so for something like this, we definitely want your feedback when this lights up for you as a customer and you start using Braille in the product. But we're excited. Megan's talked a couple times about the journey to, you know, bring Braille into that journey. We have some other exciting things that are happening. Braille isn't the only one. Richard, do you want to talk a little bit more about the next thing?
Yeah, you bet. So part of being inside Windows, we also get to work with some great partners inside Microsoft. And we spent quite a bit of time recently working with Office, and we've been working on some details. When you're writing a document, for example, as you're typing and you press space and a misspelling happens, we'll now tell you dynamically as you type when misspellings happen. For those of you that are used to using Word inside a cooperative environment, you can turn on things that are called track changes. So, for example, if Megan and Kelly and I were working on a document and we edit at different times, as I read that document, it can tell me who made the change, and I can understand what section of that document was changed by who as I'm going through it. And we've also done a bunch of work to help expose really some formatting information. So on some objects, you might want to know what's the foreground color, what's the background color, so we can kind of start giving you more rich, detailed information about objects. And then we've done quite a bit of work also around languages. You know, we continue to support more and more languages, and we recognize that in particular parts of the world, it's common to have multilingual documents. So I spent quite a bit of time with Office today. So if you have the Microsoft mobile engines installed for Chinese and English, if you have a Chinese and English document, it will automatically switch back and forth between the voices, so it can be read as you go along. And then for your primary language on your OS, we'll always read things like enter spelling error, enter list, and exit list in that native language, so that you can always have a consistent kind of reading of the important information about formatting and list entry and list exit. So excited to have that partnership with Office. Of course, it will work any places where apps do the support. So multi-language switch will work also in the operating system and other areas of the operating system and other apps. But we're really focused on the Word Canvas and documentation for the multilingual work. So that's one of many areas where we've been working on really how do we deepen the ability to understand documents and work with people on documents. And we've continued to invest. As I mentioned earlier, we invest a little more in scan mode, and we continue to invest in the web. And I'll let Kelly say a bit more about what we're doing there.
Thanks again, Brett. And so Brett mentioned a little bit ago something in Narrator that we call scan mode. And that's, you know, the name that we've given it. But what we really are trying to focus on is how can you read and navigate efficiently across the range of experiences. Brett talked a little bit about how you turn that on if you've not used it with caps lock and space. And then you can use the up and down arrow. Probably many screen reading users, myself, I happen to be one as well. We're used to that sort of experience on the web in various programs. And then in our scan mode, you can use space to activate things. And that experience works not just on the web, but inside of the various applications that you might use on Windows, whether that's something simple like a weather app or more complicated apps that Windows offers. So we started that journey in what we called, you know, the scan mode journey in the Windows 10 anniversary update that we released last summer. Some of the enhancements we've made since then, we originally had heading navigation in general. So if you're familiar with kind of being able to press H, you can move to headings. We've done the next step that you might expect there and added navigation by heading level, so you can type a 1 for heading level 1s or a 2 for heading level 2. We've worked on other common expectations like form field navigation. So again, you can, when scan mode is enabled, press an F and jump to various form fields like edit boxes, check boxes, or an E for just edit boxes and the various hotkeys that you might expect, like C for combo boxes, R for radio buttons. The nice thing here is that these experiences work on more than just the web. So once you learn this navigation pattern, you can turn our scan mode on if you so choose and use it in other applications. So other applications that have edit boxes or headings, that same experience lights up so that you can use it. If you've not used scan mode, we support many of the other things you might expect, like T-digit tables, and when you're within a table, Control, Alt, and the various arrow keys to navigate up and down the table. We kind of take a design approach that says, we want you to be able to start by, again, using just the up and down arrow. And as you get comfortable with that, if you want to layer other navigation and reading commands on top of that, you can. So we have a couple other basics that we've added to scan mode. When you're on a web page, you can now hit Control Home to go to the top of the web page or and have the first line read, and Control N to go to the last line of the web page. And then when you're on a simple line of text, home to go to the first line and end to go to the last line. Now, if a lot of these keys sound familiar, like up and down arrow and control home and control end, one of the guiding philosophies of scan mode was it's really trying to recreate the experience of just reading that you might be used to for a long time on the web with some other technologies, or in most word processing applications where up and down arrow and work and home and end and control left and right arrow to go by word. And the other nice thing that I'll mention is, talked about a lot of hotkeys and things, and the goal from this is not to have you remember all those hotkeys. We do have out on the web a user guide to Narrator. It will be updated again with all this new information when the creators update ships, but if you go to aka.ms /narrator/get-started. We have some details on how to use all the features of Narrator, and then, as you might expect, the list of the hotkeys so that you're not trying to memorize them. Talked about a lot of different things that we're developing, and we don't do this in a vacuum. Brett, did you want to talk a little bit about feedback?
Yeah, certainly. You know, one of the things that that I think is important for people to understand is that we really do our best to listen and filter through information. We do that in a variety of ways. And so if you're like, hey, we have some feedback, you can go to just to our main website at microsoft.uservoice.com. And folks will actually look at this stuff daily. They filter feedback through different groups. So if you have feedback on specific products, it will be routed to that product team. If you have specific feedback about a narrator, it would come to our team. And so it's really a way for you to say, hey, look, I have an opinion. If you put something out there and your friends agree, they can go vote it up and say, yeah, we agree. This really is something that interests us or we would like more work on. So that's certainly one method. And then we also recognize, though, when people are in the process of using a screen reader, that they might encounter things that that cause them problems. And so what we've built into Narrator today is that if you hold down the caps lock key and you press E twice, you get a little pop-up, and it'll ask you some simple things like, were you lost, was it stuttering, and so forth. A little place to fill in some more information if you wish, and then just press OK, and that data then will be sent to us. So that way, you know, if you're in the middle of working on something and you have it fresh in your mind, you don't have to worry about jumping out, finding a web page, filling in data, and then coming back and doing your work. So it's really designed to give feedback as you go. And then there's also user-initiated feedback inside Windows. And you can go inside Windows 10 and say, hey, look, there's a feedback app. Go in there, send feedback. And that that follows very much the same path that uservoice.com does. So great ways to get feedback to us. We always appreciate it. We love just hearing the feedback, and it really kind of helps us prioritize because, as you've heard us mention, we're on a journey to continue to make things better. And that journey, you know, really does require your input and help. And it's been interesting because from Windows 8 to the Windows 10 anniversary, Windows 10 creator update, you know, we spent quite a bit of time adjusting plans and working on plans based on that feedback. So please keep the feedback coming. We do listen, and the more feedback we get, the just it's easier for us to help and do the right things for you. And then part of that feedback, one of the biggest areas we've gotten feedback since as long as I can remember, there's, you know, a certain core of the community that loves to just try new things. And one of the things that's been a challenge for folks is really how to install Windows, and we kind of have some updates and information on installation of Windows. And Kelly, do you want to kind of chat a bit about that?
Yeah, and I think it's interesting. I know we've used the word journey a few times in this conversation, but when I step back and think about my own computer use and things like that, my own computer use, and we know for some segments of our customers, is kind of like a journey. You might go out and buy a new computer, and it comes with Windows installed on it, and you can use a Narrator to answer a last few questions to get your account added and everything. And whether you choose to use Narrator or one of our partners' products, you know, you can happily use Windows and be successful. For some folks, they like to dig a little bit deeper and tinker with the machine, or they work in an IT role where they're needing to do other things where, you know, they need to reinstall Windows, or something happens to their computer, or they just decide, hey, I've been doing all these things and I'd like to start over. And I know, as Brett said, one of the pieces of feedback that we've had, you know, for many years is I want to be able to install Windows myself. I'm happy to announce, and we've talked about this in some of our blogs, our Microsoft Accessibility blog, in the Creators Update, we're moving further along that journey. For the first time, you will be able to install Windows using Narrator. There's a one-time change for those that are familiar at all. You have to reinstall Windows typically you boot off of a USB stick or a DVD or something like that, and your computer has something that's known as the boot order in that's configured in something that's known as BIOS. If this is all, you know, techno-speak to you, don't worry, but for those that have been waiting for this, you'll need some assistance to make a one-time change to your computer to adjust the boot order so that it boots off of a USB stick or a DVD first. But if you do that, when the Creator's Update is out, as soon as the computer boots off of that media, you'll be able to press that new hotkey in Narrator of Control Windows Enter, and Narrator will come up and start speaking. We recommend that you try and use a USB audio headset, just because this is really like starting from a very clean machine. Not all audio drivers will work, but USB audio will, and we've seen on audio on many built-in audio does work, but there is the potential, and just want to let you know that there are some cases where audio might not be available. But when it's working, for those that are familiar with this process, you can do all the things you would expect. Delete partitions, create partitions, format things, and really do all of the install processes that you'd want to, you know, to get your computer up and running. As Brad has also mentioned, we want your feedback when they do try this. You can always leave us that feedback at microsoftaccessibility.uservoice.com to tell us, you know, how things are working for you and how they're, you know, where we can continue to improve. I want to mention one other thing. Microsoft has a, really in my time at the company, a process that's really evolved where we're making our software available for what we call in different teams the insider programs. So for those that are comfortable kind of trying out new things that might not always work quite right as we're developing them, we do have a Windows Insiders program that anybody can join, where you can get releases of Windows as it's being developed and try some of these things out as well. If you're on Windows 10, you can sign up for the Insiders program from within the product, or you can always go to preview.windows.com and experiment.
As we spoke about kind of at the top, we've been on a journey now with Windows, and we're continuing to evolve Narrator, involve other assistive technologies, and continue to evolve the user experience. And so we really really want to continue to ask for feedback, have you involved in the process. And we also wanted to let you know that I'm looking at feedback. We also like to go out and talk with people. This is one example. We'll also be at CSUN this year. So for those of you that are at CSUN, I know I will be there. I know Kelly will be there. Other colleagues of ours will be there as well, and we'll be talking about Windows 10. There'll be a couple of sessions there where we're talking about Narrator. Kelly will be part of that session. There'll be a session of Windows 10 Creators Update, just overall what's going on inside Windows. And so we'll be out kind of talking to people there as well. So if you're there, please come by, chat with us. Love to meet you, shake your hand, and just talk to you about what's going on and get your feedback. So that's kind of really, we're just super excited, and we're happy to share what's going on. And again, we'd love your feedback. And I think,
fantastic. Thanks so much, you guys, for giving that deep dive into the incredible work that you've done with Narrator. There's a couple of just last-minute pieces of information we'd love your listeners to know, which is if for any reason you're having technical difficulty with your Microsoft product, whether that's a Windows product or an Office product being run on a different platform, we have what's called the Disability Answer Desk. So the Disability Answer Desk is where people who use assistive technology or have disabilities can get technical support from service agents that have been specifically trained on assistive technology and a range of communication styles. So if you're interested and need technical support, please call the hotline, which is 1-800-936-5900. So that's our Disability Answer Desk. If you know somebody who needs ASL, for any reason, we also have live agents that can communicate in American Sign Language. And that telephone number is 1-503-427-1234. Again, we have been working incredibly hard on the accessibility of our products and services, and we recognize that means we also have to work hard to make sure that we continue to support everybody as they run into the daily troubles that we all just have. So that's the Disability Answer Desk. You've heard a couple of times that we'd love to get your feedback from Microsoft Accessibility / User Voice. And if you're interested in just learning more about what we've been up to, please visit us on the web at Microsoft.com/accessibility. And that's really going to provide you a bunch of information on Windows that you've heard today, on Office 365, which is our new suite of Office products, which we are calling Evergreen Accessibility, because it's currently updating at about, 3 weeks, maybe a month. And so it's keeping really fresh all the accessibility work that we're doing. And it's capable of continuing to take your feedback and put it into that product and push it on out to you. So please learn more at Microsoft.com/accessibility. And I just wanted to take a couple of minutes here. I know we got to hear a ton about Windows, and I just want to give a quick preview on some of the work that's being done in Office 365, which we're working incredibly hard to make sure that you have accessible content, that you can create accessible content and consume accessible content. So right now, if you use Office 365 in Word and in PowerPoint, we have accessibility templates. And so we've made the most popular templates, I think over 1,000 now, accessible by design. So if you have people who are actively creating content, they can go ahead and use those templates, and it has all the accessibility requirements such as headings built right in. You don't have to be an accessibility expert by any means in order to build incredible accessible documents. Coming up here in the future, we're going to have automatic alt text being put on images. This is an amazing new service that's a collaboration with our cognitive APIs, kind of a fun word, meaning machine learning. So as you embed images into a document, we have the capability of providing automatic alt text to it. Now, we want to make sure that people have full control of the alt text on there. So if you would like to go in and change the alt text because it doesn't quite match what you want it to say, or for some reason it's just not quite exactly describing the image as you think it should, you can change that alt text, and then that description will be sent back to our machine learning and cognitive services to help continue to grow and learn, help the machines learn to produce better alternative descriptions. We also have another new feature called PowerPoint Designer. Now, this is a fantastic way for those like myself who certainly have never been trained to be a fantastic designer to make PowerPoint slides that just look incredibly good. It's also a fantastic way for somebody who might have low mobility to be able to make beautiful slides without a bunch of keystrokes, or for somebody who's blind or low vision, you can count on the fact that if you embed, you pop an image in and you've got some text, that it's going to arrange that in a really nice way. We've also done a ton of work with PDF. So now, as you export, a document into PDF, all of that great accessibility information is embedded in it. So if you use those templates, which we have over 1,000 of accessibility templates now, you're going to be able to maintain all of that great accessibility content into our PDF. And that's across platforms. I think one thing we're incredibly proud of is saying, we recognize that the modern workplace and just the way people live these days, if you don't just go to work and sit at your desktop computer and work, no, right? You're checking your email on your phone on the way in, and you're getting to work and you have a laptop and you go from meeting to meeting. And so we want to make sure that just these incredible, great accessibility features that we have built into Office continues to stay with you no matter what device you're on. We also want to make sure that people can collaborate inclusively. So we have now had the accessibility checker that's easily findable in the ribbon under review. So now you can ask people to, hey, can you please just run the accessibility checker on your document? And what that's going to do is it's going to highlight any accessibility errors that you might have and provide really great step-by-step instructions for how you can go ahead and fix them. Accessibility checker is, again, really making accessibility easy. You don't have to be an accessibility professional. We've got the tools built into the products to really help everybody. And we recognize that in the modern workplace, that collaboration also means sharing documents on things like OneNote. I think here's another place where we really dug in deep as a company and have completely re-architected the OneNote app from the ground up to be accessible by design. And what we learned through that process of working very closely with the disability community to re-architect that, making sure that all of those mainstream activities that you do within that app are accessible on day one, is that it just ended up working better for everybody. Again, coming back to that inclusive design concept, when we use accessibility at the heart of design, the real power is that it not only makes it accessible for people who might use assistive technology, but it just makes a better application for everybody. So OneNote now is fully accessible across all platforms. And of course, we have things like learning tools built in, which is some new ways to consume content if you might have a learning disability. So for example, research has shown that when you create more spaces between the words, it's easier to consume and remember that content. It's also got a great feature which we call Immersive Reader. So for those of you out there who use screen readers, I mean, you know the power of hearing information and the ability to really consume that information in a way that sticks with you, and now we've brought that to everybody. So you can have your document, you can put it into OneNote, which is fully accessible. You can load it into Learning Tools. You can have it read to you, so it'll automatically read the document while simultaneously highlighting it to increase comprehension for a whole range of people. So even though the office folks couldn't be with us here today, personally, we just wanted to make sure that we gave a shout-out to the hard work Dave's been doing and just the deep collaboration that we've seen across Windows and Office to make sure that all this accessibility work, you know, is really seamless from the user experience end. So we'd love to take some questions or hear comments from your listeners, and thank you again for letting us be here.
Let me interject a couple of things. First of all, your mention of the disability help desk, I think there's quite a few of us here on the site who have used it. It's been a tremendous help to a lot of us. That's the only place I knew where to start, actually, to get anybody from Microsoft to perhaps come on here today. And fortunately,
and it worked.
Yeah.
We heard you loud and clear, Rick. It was great. Yeah.
Yeah. It really did work. And there was a fella in there, I think he was a supervisor, who finally, he gave me his email address. I told them basically what we were and what we wanted to do. And after a couple calls, we did get to the right people. And that's good, but I know a lot of people on the site live alone or don't have sighted assistance, and something happens with your computer and you really feel helpless because the speech isn't working or something isn't being read right or you can't get a program to work right. And unless someone's looking at the screen, you don't know what's going on. And the
right.
Disability Help Desk with its remote access to your computer has been a tremendous idea, and I think I heard one or two interviews, I think it's from the fellow who actually runs that, and they have the right attitude, and you know, it's a great thing that Microsoft is doing. Now, so far as speech, I go back a long time, back to the early DOS days. And, it was so speech friendly, and these simple DOS screen readers, which were fairly inexpensive, actually, by today's standards, were very effective. We had complete access, and I remember when the wave of Windows, and they used to call it GUI, G-U-I, came around, you know, there was terror in the blind community among the computer users that, you know, that was the end of it. We'd never be able to use a computer again. Eventually the breakthrough in the, I guess it was the, I don't know, maybe the 90s of of screen readers that began to work with Windows and the graphical user interface That's come a long way. My knowledge of Narrator is very limited. I haven't attempted to use it recently. But one thing I have wondered about, and maybe you folks aren't really in a position to answer this, maybe it's more of a corporate question than anything else. With a company the size of Microsoft, it's, as you've outlined, its commitment to accessibility, it's always kind of puzzled me why Microsoft hasn't gone full force into a full-scale screen reader, such as maybe not JAWS per se, but we know at this point I would consider JAWS, NVDA, and WindowEyes to be the primary Windows screen readers. And it sort of has inched along with Narrator. Maybe what you've outlined here today, you know, illustrates that it's going more toward a full-scale screen reader. But I would like just a little bit of a response to that idea. Is Narrator viewed as eventually, if not now, to be a full screen reader that such that a blind person really wouldn't need any other screen reader to successfully use Windows? Or is it going to be sort of a supplement, which it has been, I think, by most blind people's judgment, to the more fully operational screen reader? So I don't know if any of you have comments on that or ideas about that.
Sure, this is Brett. I'm happy to comment a bit on that. First and foremost, like, we at Windows have a commitment to our partners. We believe there's great value in JAWS, NVDA, the third-party screeners that we work with today, because they help enable, and they will continue to help enable applications, and they do a lot of great work to help make applications that don't work as well today, to make them accessible and usable. So we fully support and continue to support that part of our ecosystem, because I think it's a unique differentiator in our platform. And then secondly, to what is the evolution of Narrator? And we're really building that evolution based on your feedback. You know, we spoke earlier that there's been very direct feedback, like, I would like to be able to do better web browsing, I would like to be able to do better email, I would like to be able to use Office products consistently and out of the box. And so we will continue to work towards that model. And so as that feedback comes in, as people use more of it, and really helps us direct it. So our intent is to go the direction that both our third-party ecosystem can continue to grow and serve the customers, and then also for us to continue to grow and serve the core needs of those that use Narrator across both Windows products and apps that are shipped on Windows as well. So it is our long-term goal to continue to support both.
Okay, so I am going to attempt to see if anybody has a question on the matters that you've covered today.
Yes, I have a question, please. You brought up PDF files, and this is kind of an A and B type question. Does or will Narrator read PDF files? JAWS will not. And the B part is, we get text messages and stuff, but they're seen by JAWS as images, and JAWS won't read them. Does or will Narrator read images? Thank you.
Well, Laura, it's really not true that screen readers can't read PDF. They can read PDFs that aren't graphical. And even JAWS actually has a optical recognition function where you might even be able to read some of them with JAWS. That's just my two cents. Okay, if you folks want to respond in any way, up to you.
Yes, this is Kelly from the Windows team, and it's a great question, and I'll answer it in a couple parts, although Rich, you've kind of commented a little bit on one of the key things. So Microsoft Edge has a built-in PDF reader as well, and Narrator does work with that PDF reader. When I think about PDF files myself, I would say I kind of divide them into three categories. So first is the absolute best PDF files are ones that not only contain text, but the creator of that file has done the things necessary to tag that file appropriately for accessibility so that you get the tables or headings or just even the text organized in a predictable fashion. With any assistive technology, be that Narrator or one of our partners, those files are definitely going to read the best because the assistive technology, the screen reader, then has all the information to present to you. The next level down on a PDF file is one that has text, but it hasn't necessarily been tagged. Our PDF reader that's built into Edge and the other PDF readers try and use various techniques to still present that text in as predictable a fashion as they can. Unfortunately, there are times when the PDF file contains just an image of the text, and those will not be readable with Narrator today. We hear the feedback and that, you know, can we, and like any situation where we know there's things that our customers are experiencing, you know, we take that they can't do that they want to, we take that feedback and we explore with what's possible. And I would say the same thing when you're talking about text messages. Again, content creators can put text or put other that is readable, and sometimes they can put images. The last thing I'll say is, as a company, and Megan hinted at this a little bit in some of the office developments, one of the things I think that we're doing as a company is working to guide people that use Microsoft technologies in making it easy and understandable to create as accessible of content as possible, so that whether you're a creator or a consumer using that content, you will get as rich an accessibility experience as possible.
Great, thanks for that answer. Anybody else have a question?
Hey, how you doing? I want to give you guys a compliment. I've used the Microsoft Accessibility Help Desk, and for a lot of people out there that are listening right now, they are a great help. So that toll-free number that they gave, maybe you guys can give it out again. They can log into your computer and actually do the help that you need, or they can walk you through it. So I want to give you guys a two thumbs up on that. But my question concerns the web accessibility with regards to Hotmail. There was a big focus of doing everything with shortcuts, but I don't think that that's really the accessibility workaround. So my question to you guys is, can you please make the menus and navigation of using Hotmail more accessible, because it's very difficult to constantly have to remember all the shortcut keys. It's easier to go through menus, and the menus are not accessible for screen reader users. Okay, thanks.
Okay, guys, what are you, anything on that?
Yeah, I'll two things. That's great feedback. This is Kelly. We'll definitely share that with the product team. And I would just reiterate, any time that you encounter things like this, if you're comfortable, again, it is invaluable for us to hear these sorts of things. And if you log them at microsoftaccessibility.uservoice.com, it really, the team that runs that and looks at that information, it helps them understand what's going on. They can pass that on to the engineering teams. You can share that information on social media, mailing lists, and have other people vote on them. It's invaluable to hear this feedback. And I know that I will take this information back to the team and mention it to them as well.
Okay, Megan, Brett, Kelly, I want to thank you folks. You obviously put a lot of effort into this, and we really appreciate it. I know I do, and it's always great to hear from the actual source of the programs we use, especially something like Windows. My experience is that even though there are a significant and growing number of people, blind people I'm speaking of here and for this purpose, using Macs here and there. I still think the overwhelming majority rely on Windows, and my experience is that far more things are accessible or usable with Windows. So we are wed to Windows, and the more accessible it can be, the more speech friendly it can be, and the more we can use it without sighted assistance, the better it is. And obviously you've expressed a great commitment to that, and I'm glad, personally, I'm very glad to hear that Microsoft has such a commitment. And I think, as we've said here today, I think it is embodied in or manifested by certainly the Disability Help Desk, which is a great idea, and in that case, Microsoft has really shown some forward thinking with that. So Roger, who was the fellow who just spoke, he was requesting the number again. Maybe you could just give that number again before we say goodbye.
Yes, absolutely. The Disability Answer Desk is 1-800-936-5900. And if you need American Sign Language, that number is 503-427-1234. And I know we've mentioned it a couple of times today, but once again, your feedback is invaluable. So please go to microsoftaccessibility.uservoice.com and share this information with us so that we can get it to our engineers. And if you want to learn more about Microsoft Accessibility as a whole, please go to microsoft.com/accessibility. It's been fantastic to be here with you today, and just have a really fabulous birthday in celebration.
Yeah, happy birthday. Thank you so much for having us.
Thanks a lot, folks,
Thank you.
Have a good rest of the weekend. Take care.
Thank you. So
bye-bye.
Bye-bye.